What's going on? It's your boy Jay Will, your host of the Jay Will Podcast, interviews and commentary. Follow my music page, James Williams Music. And if you need more information about the podcast, email me at leewill@gmail.com. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be considered a legal, health, tax, or professional advice of any kind. We're not responsible for any losses, damages, or liabilities that may arise from the use of this podcast and podcast information. My guest today is from Cincinnati, Ohio, Councilwoman Mika D. Owens. From Cincinnati, Ohio, Council Lady, Councilwoman, the Council Extraordinaire, Mika D. Owens. How are you, ma'am?
I am fantastic, Jay Will. Thank you so much for having me. Excited to be on.
Oh, wow. It's so great to have you. I met you a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
And I was very intrigued. First of all, at your professionalism, and then I was intrigued of how accomplished you are with looking so young.
Well, I am young, so thank you. No, it was a blessing being in service with you. Certainly, I enjoyed attending. And you know, I'm a woman who grew up in Avondale, so any opportunity to worship with brothers and sisters in Christ, you know, that certainly makes my heart glad. And, you know, I'm just happy to be able to serve the city of Cincinnati and share the things that I've worked on, over the last several years. And certainly, change doesn't happen overnight, but progress, is incremental, and, just excited to always be able to share that with people. Because certainly when I think about going into City Hall, every day, when I walk up those stairs, I truly am there to do the work and to, change systems, at the end of the day. And it's through good policy and legislation that helps to do that. And so really excited to share more too.
Yeah. So, Avondale is a community in Cincinnati.
Yeah.
And you grew up in Cincinnati.
Yes.
And so I want to ask, in your experiences growing up in Avondale, was that one of the reasons you decided to enter into politics? How did you get started in politics?
Yeah, that's a great question. One, I think being raised in the city that I get to serve every day is extra special because I've lived my entire life here. I've certainly traveled the world. My mom retired from American Airlines. My dad retired from General Electric. So hardworking folks. But it was in Avondale that I began to traverse the world, experience the world. I went to the rec center right in North Avondale and walked up the street every day of the summer and took martial arts class. And, you know, it's in Avondale that, you know, I also raised my son and went off to college and all of these things. And but showing up in the world, it's great schools that I went to, CPS schools like Schroeder and Kilgore and North Avondale and places, graduated from Purcell Marion, but places that taught me about the value of service. And so I think at some point when I went off to college, I had my son in college with me, full-time student, graduated on time, Miami University, came back home and just, you know, I also am someone who grew up in the faith community. So I grew up at Christ Emmanuel Christian Fellowship with Bishop Michael Dantley, now being led by Pastor David Goins. And I learned that the world doesn't change until you show up. And so as I, you know, took my faith with me growing up in this world, you know, came back from college and thinking about how do I want to make a difference? And so certainly getting involved, showing up in spaces, advocating for things that you care about, serving on boards of nonprofits, fast forward, you know, it became a moment of recognizing that like systemic change happens when you get involved in democracy and you show up at the ballot box, you elect leaders who are reflective of the values that you hold. And so what does that look like? So I started volunteering on campaigns and it was in 2016. I had just finished a project called the Walking School Bus, working with CPS and hiring adults in communities to walk kids to and from school as their mode of transportation. We started with four schools and we scaled up, but we also attached behavior management, the study of that, and what are the longitudinal, the long-term results and impact that that can have on young people when you have good adults around them. And so I'm sitting on Fountain Square and I hear Hillary Clinton. And so this project had ended sooner than expected. And that's what happens sometimes when you have federally funded projects. And so I'm sitting on Fountain Square and Hillary Clinton is giving a speech to the national NAACP. And she's saying, we're getting ready to hire organizers across Ohio. And I was sitting there in a moment thinking, okay, this is an important cycle. This is an important time to show up. And I want to do something to be helpful in terms of a presidential election and where my values aligned. And so I decided to organize. And so I got hired to do that. And it was one of the best experiences ever. But it certainly taught me that, you know, democracy is fragile and it takes work. And it takes keep building at it to make it stronger. And so I went into local government after that, worked in the clerk of courts, our court system, you know, a place that I've certainly walked into and had to pay a ticket and all those things, right? Experiencing the same impacts that I am sure some people in our community have felt. And we did great things like building a help center that helps people navigate going through the courts, right? The courts are a scary place if you're not an attorney. And so being able to provide assistance, you know, to the public, because I think that's what government and public spaces should do. And then at some point around 2018, I got really inspired by, you know, women who had run for Congress and gotten elected and wanting to do something and showing up. And so at some point I thought about, you know, I watch the national news and all of the issues that are on the news, they start in your backyard, right? Yeah. They start in local government. They start with people who are making decisions about your day-to-day interaction with the city that you live in. Are there clean streets? Are there safe streets? Is there housing? Are there opportunities for young people? All of these things. And so, you know, I thought my experience growing up here and raising a son here, I want Cincinnati to be the best that she possibly can be, this queen city. And so I decided to throw my hat in the ring and fight for people who may share similar stories to me, like being a single mom and being on CMHA's waiting list. I get that. 3 years it took to get to the top, and which informs me about, and when I got to the top, you know, the options, I was looking for something that was, you know, really more quality. And so it drives me and propels me to think about what it means, affordable housing and options for quality units in the city, and why reducing evictions matter. And this is work that I go into City Hall every day and tackle. And so we've seen great success in the things like access to counsel, giving people rental assistance and an attorney to go through an eviction proceeding with them. And these, there are far better results when you have an attorney representing you than being by yourself. And so when we think about the landscape and the ecosystem of housing, you know, these are the things that are about leveling the playing field and empowering renters in the city of Cincinnati. And even further upstream is let's make sure we are building an entire ecosystem that can help support a tenant-landlord relationship, even at the time, the very first instance where it's beginning to break down. And, you know, and it also drives me when you think about, you know, folks' everyday living, the reason why people are being evicted is because they can't afford the rent. And so decisions around building more affordable units in the city of Cincinnati, in addition to the work that we're doing on stabilization, eviction prevention and diversion, you know, people's wages are not rising with this at the same rate as costs are. And so, you know, if we're going to be a strong Cincinnati workforce and connecting people to living wage jobs, opportunities, building our young people up in this ecosystem, those are things that are truly on my priority list as I go into City Hall with the support of voters in November. So the work continues, but it's been my life experience that has led me to this moment and caring about the outcomes for everyone living in the city of Cincinnati.
So you made a decision that you kind of like fell into the political side of it. You had, you know, you were looking at it and said, oh, this might be something I can do. But then you kind of, you know, the planets aligned, if you will, and you just kind of fell into it. Yeah. So how hard was it after you found out that this is what you wanted to do to actually launch a campaign? Because you're an elected official.
I am. And so it takes work.
So tell me about that process. What do you got to do? I'm not a politician. So you create a bunch of flyers and you go out, you do, knock on some doors, you hug some people and kiss some babies. What do you got to do?
Yeah, so if it were only that easy. I think the first thing, and certainly when we think about democracy and building something that's better, it is certainly strengthened by representation and lived experience and everyone bringing their best selves to that for the greater we and the greater good. And I think it first starts with being reflective on what are the things that you care about? And I recognize that not everyone is going to run for office because we also need people to help staff those offices. You know, we also need good folks to go into government and help write policies and implement programs and initiatives that are going to help move our community forward. So I think it starts with one, what is your why and your reason to want to serve in this way? And then, you know, when you show up in spaces, you know, not necessarily for the first time, but you keep showing up, you support other people, you support other candidates along the way. There's something very magical about advocacy in its most authentic form, fighting with other people for something that is bigger than you. And when you put yourself in that space to do that, whether it be gun violence, whether it be building more housing, affordable housing in the city, whether it be jobs, whether it be climate, no matter what, putting yourself in a space of fighting for something is important. And so, you know, at some point you have folks that help to shape and mentor, because just like in any other environment, you have people that along the way, because they align with your values, you begin to look at them as mentors or as people that you look up to. And so, you know, having good conversations and making a decision ultimately that says, yes, I want to serve in this way because it's not about me. It's about the greater good. And then, you know, the technical pieces are, you know, you get a good campaign staff around you and you have to go out and you have to do the necessary job of raising money, which is not easy. And it's certainly not easy being a woman or being a Black woman. And so being tenacious about it, articulating your vision, because all leaders should be operating with a vision, again, something that is bigger than themselves. And then you hope that people just believe in you and then you follow up and deliver on those things. And so the process is one where, the technical pieces, like I said, you get campaign staff, you raise money, you share a message, and then you hope that, you know, you've done the work necessary for people to trust in your leadership and your ability to deliver on results at the end of the day. And that's the beauty of democracy, truly. Yeah. And, you know, there are more things that we as elected officials, and I'm an organizer at heart. When I organized in 2016, I knew that this was a space, you know, you get bit by the bug. And it's like, I kept organizing, even creating, you know, in 2020, the Greater Cincinnati Voter Collaborative, helping to people navigate voting in a pandemic and a presidential election. And so we brought together civic institutions, NAACP, ACLU, League of Women Voters, Cincinnati. It's like, we drove people to the polls and we just created a message that it was safe to vote at home in a pandemic where so many people were interfacing with democracy in a new way. What is the drop box? What is the absentee ballot? What is the Board of Elections? All of those things. But what is not lost on me is that it requires us to create more opportunity for people to not only think about running for office, but actually doing it. And creating more seats at the table and are bringing our young people into this political process, because everything is political. Everything, when we walk out of our door every single day, it is an elected official like myself who's made a decision about things, right? Who's made a decision about how we continue to invest in public safety, how we make sure fire and police, trash and recycling happens, paving roads and making sure sidewalks are infrastructure is invested in, green space in our communities, making sure we're supporting, you know, our rec centers and programming for young people. And you make decisions about you know, how you spend taxpayer dollars. But at the end of the day, we need more folks to run for office, staff campaigns, work in public office as well. So I look forward to doing these things.
How difficult? So obviously, and I know this, I watch the news all the time. I'm heavy into politics. I like to watch and I like to hear both sides. How is it coming in with a viewpoint and being able to collaborate with somebody who doesn't exactly agree with you? How do you negotiate that? Because people can get downright ugly and really nasty if you don't really share their viewpoints. How do you get around that? How do you work with colleagues in that capacity?
Yeah, certainly. Well, I think in any environment, you always have to be a person who is, one, respectful of other human beings, right? I am grateful to the League of Women Voters. I went to an event and on a table were all these cool buttons. And one of them said, be a nice human. And I said, I want that one. but it's the basic, I think when you're in government, it's the basic idea that you are respecting other people. And so though there might be disagreement on issues, you debate those civilly and respectfully. As we're looking at the current climate right now and at the federal level in DC and in majority of our state legislatures, you do see that we are divided as a nation. At the local level, what I'm grateful about is that because we're making decisions that are about the city's budget and how we apply them to the basic necessities and basic services, you don't really see that type of disagreement that we're seeing in DC right now, thankfully. But certainly,
thank God.
But certainly, right. You know, I think it's being value driven. That helps you to, one, connect with people that you work with, me in City Hall. It's always, you know, making decisions and coming to the center, the moral compass of doing what's right for the city of Cincinnati. Sometimes how we get there, we might disagree. We might disagree about how much money we invested in XYZ. But certainly you do it respectfully at the end of the day. And that could be in any environment, business, nonprofit, whatever it is. But if you are someone who seeks to work with others and collaborate, because again, when you go into public service, it has to be because it's bigger than yourself. Yeah. I think that becomes the guiding star, if you will. And that's certainly how I approach working with my colleagues in City Hall. Now, we are all Democrats, but that doesn't mean that we agree on everything or that there are no disagreements. But again, you know, you do it civilly and ideally with the city's best interests at heart and the people that we serve every single day.
Yeah. So, I mean, even brothers and sisters fight every now and then, you know what I'm saying? It's got to be expected. You know, individuals have different viewpoints and different processes of how they want to get things accomplished and different ideas of how they want to get things accomplished. But we're all adults. It should be anyway. We should be able to sit around and just have an adult conversation and sometimes agree to just disagree, but come to a common means. And you mentioned something a little earlier about you working with the local government to help with affordable housing. What is the city doing to build more affordable housing?
Yeah, that's a great question. So the very first thing, I've had the pleasure of serving on Cincinnati's city council for 2 terms. And so I'm on the ballot for my 3rd term to city council. And so coming into City Hall in 2021, January being sworn in, this council, that council, because it's changed with new members over the course of these last few years. But the council came in along with the mayor being committed to the building and creation of affordable housing. One of the very first things we did was to invest money into our Affordable Housing Trust Fund, which was created in the previous council before us. It didn't have a lot of money in it, but the fund was created. And so we wanted to make an investment into what does this look like moving forward? Building affordable units, what does that mean for the cost of doing it and subsidy to help? Developing is not cheap, right? And so it's based on rents, it's based on cost of goods, all of the things. And so when you're talking about affordable housing, which is typically targeted at one's income based on AMI or area median income and what one's income is in relation to the average, you're talking about subsidy. And so supporting that means you have to incentivize the development so that it ultimately gets done. And so we added millions of dollars to be able to do that, for developers to be able to take advantage of this fund that is flexible enough that allows them to create affordable units in the projects that we're seeing around the city. And so as a result, I think we... over $100 million, the city invested, the county invested, private dollars in there as well. So you had a really great example of public-private partnership because there's not endless money at the city, right? It is based on the revenue of earnings tax into the city, which is why it's important that we grow that and build housing to attract people. But what we're seeing is that because of how we approach this, we've created more affordable units than any other council that has preceded us. And over the course of the last year, I want to say maybe 1,500 units of affordable housing have been created. And a majority of those were at a 60% and lower AMI, which is very significant. I mean, that is true affordable housing. So we're seeing the results. And so we also said, hey, let's create a new budget policy where after we allocate all of our expenses, the things that we pay for, fire, police, rec, clean DPS, clean up trash, all the things, let's make sure we have a dedicated revenue source that continues to go into that trust fund. And so that's been $5 million every time we go through our budget waterfall motion, policy motion. And so what we have to do is keep doing what's working. And so at the top of the list for me is making sure that continues to happen, that investment, we continue to incentivize the projects and that we actually increase our investment into the Affordable Housing Trust Fund. And so what are the revenue sources to do that? And so that's what the city has been doing. And, you know, certainly building doesn't happen overnight and it takes all types of projects. It takes market rate projects to help bring naturally occurring affordable units to make sure those get freed up. Because right now, with not enough housing stock, you have people that should be in a starter home that are actually consuming rental units. And so we got to build more. We've got to build more market rate. We've got to build more affordable units. And so having this fund helps those two things to really come together with a majority of the units being built being affordable. So again, it's been successful and we're going to keep going.
Yeah. So let's say that I need housing assistance. How would I go about doing that? Is there a website or do I come down to the city hall and camp out in a sleeping bag and ringing a bell? What do I do?
Yeah, this is a great question that has is very layered. And I actually, and this is the work of you know, what we've built out around our reducing evictions, preventing evictions. It's an entire ecosystem that we're looking at, one of which is how can we prevent people from even becoming homeless? And so my first year on council, my first 2 years, I, wanting to look at our budget differently, because let me just say this. You can do the same things that you've always done and expect a different result, but we know that there's a definition to that, right? And so the same thing with how we look at our city's budget, which are precious dollars that because of taxes, right? Because of people working here, and that is what comes into our general fund. And any smart, any fiduciary agent of a large body of money, you always want to make sure you're making the best investment. Meaning, while dealing with social issues like homelessness and addiction and gun violence, all of these things, well, in my mind, it requires us to think differently and to respond differently. And so if we can apply resources to say, let's go upstream, where might we be able to detect that someone is on the verge of possibly becoming homeless, like utilities get shut off, or, you know, someone is interfacing with it with another nonprofit agency in the community. So I describe all that to say, we created the first ever Impact Award, which was offering a pot of money through our Human Services Fund to do something that we've never done. How can we solve for this, right? And these things don't happen overnight in terms of eradicating homelessness. We certainly aren't the council that came in and all of a sudden people are homeless. We're talking about systemic issues at the end of the day, which is why my work is critical to addressing systems change, right? Otherwise, we're dealing with status quo. So we created the Impact Award to foster organizations coming together. When you're thinking about, you know, city dollars that are finite, the city can't fund every nonprofit out there. We just can't. But how might we foster opportunities to say, how can we prevent? How can we reduce? And so we've seen folks come together, strategies to end homelessness, along with other partners, to say, hey, let's build a data set to understand how technology and innovation can play a role in this. So that project is happening. Within the ecosystem of reducing evictions, having an attorney, giving people rental assistance, those have been pieces. And we literally, in a conversation today, and we're being responsible with the way we're approaching this work. So we're working with a consultant who's worked with other cities across the country who have passed things like right to counsel or access to counsel. How do we do this in the best way, in the most strategic way? And so literally today, our consultants were in town. And so we're also talking about how do we build out this, what we would call top of the funnel. So as soon as someone is identifying that they are in need of help, where do they go? So our community partners, our trusted folks, where people have probably already interacted with, even before they come to United Way, which is our partner in this work, to say, hey, when someone gets a notice to leave the premises, we're reaching out to them, or we're reaching out to them to say, hey, here's some support. But there's still other pieces on this journey that even before that happens. And so we're literally building these things out. And again, they take time, but we're seeing the results and the progress of what we've already done. And so a part of that being, you know, do we create housing counselors or navigators within the community that can help kind of triage these things? And sometimes people don't realize they're in a legal situation, but where can someone go to say, hey, I think I'm going to fall behind on my rent this month? And automatically that becomes a place of being triaged. So again, the intention is to, how can we prevent people from being homeless? How can we prevent people from being evicted? And the further we go upstream, the better. And so that's why, you know, when we think about policies and systems change, it requires to look at things very comprehensively. So right now, I would say if someone is, you know, housing insecure or needs some support, you would want to reach out. You can reach out to the city of Cincinnati. It'd be best to call 211, which is United Way's kind of intake robust platform that connects people to resources. And so we're going to continue to invest in these things, invest in our community partners, and really build solutions that don't exist right now. Ultimately, we also created our tenants guide, which has been flying out of the doors of City Hall. We've digitized it, and so it's on our website. But we spent a couple of years and this is in partnership with housing providers and nonprofit partners that I meet with every 2 weeks, and we talk through all of these things. And it's a sounding board, and we're learning from each other. And CPS and the county is represented, and it's wonderful. And what we created was a tenants guide that says, rental assistance, go here or call here, which also includes the help center and the court system. What does putting your rent in escrow mean? What do you do? What are the steps to that? What do living conditions need to look like when you walk in? How do you document that? So education has also been, and information has also been a part of this work around what I've called Tenants' Bill of Rights, which I got to work on my very first, really, truly my first couple of months in City Hall. And so it's been amazing to look back and see the progress that we've made. But ultimately, it's about creating a space where people realize what rights are afforded to them as renters in the city of Cincinnati, as housing providers, and how do we provide the best landscape of education, resources, information, so that ultimately people are staying housed. And because our work has been collaborative, we know that, you know, it's costly to evict people.
Yeah.
There's also institutional investors, folks that are consuming rentals, stock, and all of that don't even live here. And so that is also a thing to tackle. But it's costly to go to court. And so if we can make sure that everyone is aware of the resources and know what the intervention points are, we can help to keep roofs over people's heads. And so it requires housing providers. And housing providers are asking, like, I love to have information to be able to direct people to.
Yeah.
So this is what we're building out. Again, we're seeing success in it. But ultimately, if you have some housing instability issues, call 211, and that would be a great first step in getting connected to resources.
So I guess I want to ask this question. So if somebody needs housing assistance, they're going to call 211. Ladies and gentlemen, y'all heard that. 211. 211. Call that number. Get some
and
help.
The city of Cincinnati is the only entity, sorry, just to say this, that is actually giving rental assistance. So after the pandemic and you had all of the ARPA dollars, those are all gone away now. That emergency rental assistance, those are all gone away. And so it has been my top priority to continue to advocate for money for the city to be able to support this work. And we've been doing that. And it's been millions of dollars. And I would say millions of dollars certainly invested to keep people in their home. So sorry, go.
No. I wanted to say thank you for doing that. But my question is after somebody receives assistance, to be able to help them not be able to fall or have a residual falling into that category again, is there some type of financial literacy classes that you offer?
Yeah, certainly. And so when we first thought about the design of access to counsel, it was truly, how do we make this most comprehensive and build in wraparound services to support families? Because certainly, you know, when people are behind on their rent, it's not because, and this is a very timely conversation, because all of this being unwrapped in the first report that we're going to produce about this work that we've been doing over the past year or so. And so, again, our partners were in town, and so we'll be releasing this soon. But we recognize, again, these are systemic issues. We recognize that the majority of people who are evicted are folks that work full-time or part-time. So we're talking about folks that work. And so we're talking about wages and all the things. And so how might we create, again, other opportunities where people receive the support that they need? And sometimes it's, I had to use my rent on a funeral expense. And so there are opportunities to continue to build this out. And so I go back to the earlier part is, you know, what are the necessary touch points and the trusted folks in community that can help navigate and triage? And so we are really shaping that as we speak. And let's just say where we're probably going to land is this concept of a housing navigator or a housing counselor, someone who can, again, before things go too far down the road, someone who can help triage that information and say, oh, well, it sounds like if you are calling, for example, because you are $100 short of paying your Duke bill, let's look at some other things. And then that becoming a point of, let's build in financial literacy. Let's build in, okay, let's move you to economic stability. So again, this is work that we're sitting right on the precipice of, truly.
Yeah, I think it's important. When I was young, I was listening to Dave Ramsey religiously Like every day I had the AM on and I was listening to Dave Ramsey, and just having the extra insight on how to handle my finances, it started helping me out make better decisions. And then before you knew it, I was able to accommodate everything that was in front of me bill wise and didn't need as much help as I did to begin with. But that financial and literacy piece definitely helped me out.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, to your point too, this is where, you know, my role as an elected official, while I'm working on change, systemic change, policies, building new things, new solutions, it's also about the power of convening. And, you know, I met a banker, someone who works at a financial institution, and said, hey, we go out in the community and we do this. And so we exchange, I got his information. And it's like, yeah, let's amplify that just on its own, right? And so I think people do want, you know, what are the services that help people feel resilient and stable? And so bringing folks together to have access to those resources. I was at Schroeder Paideia. They invited, you know, folks, candidates to come in and speak with the class, and you have an engaged group of young people. And at the end of it, I asked them, you know, I am interested in what's important to you. And let's go around and share. And so a couple of people shared things. One young man said, hey, what do you do for, you know, learning about finances and things like that? And I said, thank you for sharing that. They want to know. Want to learn too. And so we got to do more of getting things out into community and connecting people to resources, which is what I've been trying to do with my event called Social Services Day. It was birthed from the concept of, you know, what are the resources right here at the city, like our harbor program, like, you know, abatement, you know, getting tax abatement incentives on, you know, improving your home. What are other resources around, you know, just safety and all these pieces that, you know, when we have things at the city that people have not taken complete advantage of, how do we get those things out? In addition to our partners who also are serving the community in various capacities. And so this event called Social Services Day, we've been doing it, you know, over the past couple of years, family fun, free food trucks, come and learn something, take something away, give away swag bags, all the things, family oriented DJ. We're having another one this Saturday, September the 13th from 11 to 3 at Community Action Agency. It's always outdoors and just really a fun, activative event. But to your point, it's how do we continue to get resources out into the community and going outside of the walls of you know, City Hall or any other place that we might be accustomed to people coming to, going out is important. And that is all, again, as a love of my, you know, being an organizer and bringing people together and planning things and, you know, people being able to have positive experiences in this city. So just another plug for Social Services Day. We've been doing it about twice a year for the past couple of years. Next year, I'll be really excited. We're going to work with the Reds Academy. They were excited to have us. We couldn't pull it off for this year just because we ran into a date situation. But next year, we're going to do something really big with them. And, you know, everybody come out this Saturday and certainly keep coming out and enjoying all that Cincinnati has to offer, the positive.
That's pretty awesome. That's pretty awesome. So I want to go back to the homelessness issue. You briefly touched on it, but I want to dig just a little bit deeper, because there's been, you know, several people from downtown that continuously talk about the crisis of the homeless people downtown. What is the city doing to prevent these people from being unhoused or homeless? And so I asked that, but there's a part B to that question.
Yeah.
Do some of these people like being homeless?
Well, yeah, it's a layer. It's layered. So yes, our work around eviction prevention, the impact awards that I mentioned earlier, all of those are pieces to being able to prevent homelessness at the end of the day, because there is a direct correlation between someone being evicted, not having a, you know, no one plans to be evicted, What happens after that? You walk into a shelter if there's room, right? So, which is why our eviction work is so important, because we're trying to prevent. So there's that work, right? There are the things around addiction treatment and mental health that become a part of that. And the city is investing, right? We have invested in nonprofit organizations that do this work, Talbert House, all of them that you can think of, Cat House, certainly doing more. So we've got, folks at the city who work around placemaking strategies. And so being very responsive to how we go out and support people. And so you've got folks that will show up and try to provide resources and services for folks. At the end of the day, we certainly need to build more housing. We need to make sure people have living wage jobs, increase wages, and certainly help to keep a roof over someone's head. And so we're doing these things. It doesn't change overnight, certainly. There's more work to do. There's more work to do.
There's always work to do. You know what I'm saying? Even when you think you got it all figured out, that's where you really need to be working harder to make sure you didn't miss something.
Certainly.
That's what I do all the time.
Certainly. And I think as a city, no one wants to see people living, dwelling on the streets. And taking a step back, let me also say, cities can't do everything on their own, which is why you have government at the federal level who should be supporting housing and urban development, should be supporting healthcare, access to Medicaid, all of these things that are costly for folks if you don't have enough to even pay for it in the beginning. And so I say all that to say, we are in an environment right now where there are things being threatened that are the lifelines for folks to exist. Which is why, all these things are so connected, but which is why democracy matters and showing up and the people who are making decisions, right? At the end of the day, we are dealing with a government, a federal government administration right now, who's trying to go after homeless people and actually criminalize homeless people. And again, these are systemic issues. These are systemic issues. It requires our attention to it. It requires our resources to it. It requires partnership at the federal, state, and local level. And that's just about with every issue you can think of, including gun violence. And so it's important that folks show up and pay attention to what's going on right now.
So I want to divert, because I heard this. I heard somebody mention this. And I had no idea what they were talking about. I was like, bro, what are you talking about, bro? The Green Cincinnati Plan. What is that?
I love it. I love that someone was talking to you about the Green Cincinnati Plan. Well, let me just say this. Climate change is real. Science is real. And science would tell us that because we are burning fossil fuels, because we are throwing things into the landfill that maybe should be recycled, these are causes to the earth getting hotter. How us as a federal government responds to that is important. The Paris Climate Agreement. That's why that is important, that global leaders lead on this issue that we know is real, because science tells us it's real. It's not a hoax. And so when the earth is getting hotter, you have all of these cataclysmic impacts. You have irregular weather patterns. You and I and some of your viewers might be folks that remember that in December, it was always cold growing up. It was always snow on the ground. It was December. Yeah. Now it might be 80 degrees and it's December. So the Green Cincinnati Plan is a recognition And this plan, I will give very much kudos and props to Mayor John Cranley, who was at the forefront of creating this during his time in City Hall. But the Green Cincinnati plan started as, how do we as a city reduce carbon into the atmosphere? What decisions do we need to make to help do that? And let's update this plan every 5 years to be accountable to the new evolving data and science. And so over the course of time, you had things like building a solar array farm, which helps to aggregate energy, clean energy, lower the cost of energy, which is also about affordability of living. Over the course of time, and I was able to, one, come into city council and lead the first ever climate committee. And that was important because we were a group of leaders knowing that climate is one of the, is the top issue, truly. You don't have a planet that's functioning. It exacerbates everything else, the cost of goods, all the things that you can think of. White neighborhoods are hotter, that don't have enough shade and trees and old housing stock. It's so interrelated. Why transportation, electrifying the city matters. So the Green Cincinnati plan is a plan around carbon reduction at the end of the day in all the sectors where you see the majority of it. Transportation, buildings, green space, right? How we make sure there's more of it to balance out. And so it is our plan to keep us accountable to basically being good stewards of climate. Of our community. We're one of the only cities that have a climate plan. We're certainly one of the few cities, one of the only in the region. Like, there are others around the country, but yeah, certainly in this region, we are a leader in this. And so it would have us direct us in it will put us in the direction of understanding why the investment into issue 7, the transit levy, that is now allowing Metro to not only reinvent itself to be more efficient, but to build more routes and to build bus rapid transit. Why other modes of transportation are important to invest in, like biking infrastructure, shared paths. You know, why making sure there's green space in this community is important. Why planting trees are important. And so that is the nucleus basically of the Green Cincinnati plan. It is something I'm very, very proud of, having been able to lead this last refresh, coming in and leading the first ever climate committee in the city of Cincinnati, which the goal was to make sure that, one, as we do this work, we recognize that there's racial equity to this. When we think about neighborhoods and the investment in neighborhoods and climate's impact on those neighborhoods, and that we were going to raise this conversation, particularly because of those who have not historically been at the table and a part of this conversation, but need to be, people that look like you and I. And so I am so proud that even as we sit here today, someone has mentioned the Green Cincinnati plan to you. That in itself is progress, because if we are not all invested, not only educate it, but invest it in better outcomes for climate. You know, what world and what community are we leaving for our children, right? At the end of the day. And so the Green Cincinnati plan is what keeps us accountable to that, even in spite of what is happening at the federal level and the fact that they don't believe in science and don't believe that these investments are worth it. And, you know, which is why we go back to the previous administration and the Build Back Better, the Climate and Jobs and Infrastructure Act, the millions of dollars that were being infused into communities to build infrastructure, make infrastructure greener, build around a green workforce, why all these things matter, which I go back to democracy. People making decisions about how we live every single day. And so I guess if I was, you know, on my soapbox today and your message, show up, pay attention, vote, get involved.
Yeah, yeah.
And that really is the formula for the environment and where one might start seeing themselves as a person who wants to effectuate change. And so, you know, the philosophy is you are either a part of the problem or you're part of the solution. And we all have a role to play in that.
We all got a job to do.
We all have a job to do. And protecting the planet is at the top of the list. And yes, our Green Cincinnati Plan, I would certainly recommend that people go on our website and read it. It's amazing. There's a jobs implication to that. Training a workforce for green jobs. When you think about HVAC and electricians being able to take care of electric vehicles and install electric pumps in homes and help to reduce the cost of energy and the consumption of it. It's a magnificent body of work and it's always evolving. And so make sure you take a look at it.
So from a selfish standpoint, I don't mind it being 80 degrees in December because I ride motorcycles, right?
Okay.
I ride my motorcycle. So if it's December, it's 80 degrees.
Florida or California, but.
No, I want to move to Florida. They got alligators and hurricanes down there. But on a serious note, and so Cincinnati's planning on going to, you know, focus on being more green. So does that mean that our buses are going to be transitioning to electric buses?
Yeah. So Metro has already made the investment into, I believe, hybrid. So you have a mix of electric and, you know, the way cars would naturally run, reducing the amount of a full fuel combustion, you know, engine, a complete 100%. But certainly the Metro is also looking at how they electrify their fleet. And they're an important partner because transportation is the largest sector of carbon emission. And so the more people that begin to adopt driving an electric vehicle, you know, walking when you can instead of driving, taking public transit, all of these things matter. And again, going back to policies and decision making, this is why the IRA, the rebate on being able to make these type of investments in one's household was really important in this last administration. And so now you see this federal government slashing everything that should matter to people.
Yeah. There's so many mixed emotions evolved around this whole thing. I see it. I talk to a lot of people, talk to a lot of Black people, talk to a lot of white people, and there's a lot of mixed emotions on both sides. I've heard, you know, real advocates for the administration on the Black side as well as the white side, but I've heard real disappointment from the white side and the Black side, you know. And so how did you get over the hump of that? Because it's certainly a mixed pot of greens here. You got turnip greens with mustard greens mixed all in the pot.
And well, I like a good mixed green pot, but go ahead.
How did you get people on board with saying, hey, this is safe for the planet? We gotta stop doing all this. You know, we got fossil fuels, let's use it as a backup and not as a primary. How do you get people to buy into that?
Well, you know, it's called truth, and science is factual. Science is what helps us to be an advanced nation in treating diseases like cancer and AIDS and vaccines. And so I think it starts with, and unfortunately we're in an environment where the truth is not so clear right now because you have people saying differently. But in this particular conversation around climate, it's based on science. It's based on people that know our planet should be at 1.4 degrees Celsius. And because of, and this is where, as a believer, and particularly folks that are faith walking, believe in God, all those things, he created this awesome planet. And of course, with everything, she, he, God, the creator of all things, obviously it has a role. It has a purpose and a function. It should be able to cool itself down because of the natural ecosystem. And I'm sorry, I'm not a scientist. I certainly enjoy learning about science.
Yeah.
But, you know, there are those that do this, right? And so listening to people who know, right? That's important, respecting people's profession and education. But, you know, we're talking about basic science that we all learned in school. And, you know, when you have it's one, I would challenge people to one, learn for yourself.
Yeah.
I certainly didn't come into leading this first ever climate committee because I came from a family who I learned about 1.4 degrees Celsius in grade school. No, I came knowing that the planet's important. I know the basic recycling and respecting the planet and the earth and all these things and natural habitats, and it all has a function and it goes together.
Yeah.
From what happens in the ocean to what happens in a rainforest in the Amazon, it is all connected. And, you know, and when you think about the species of, you know, animals, beautiful animals that roam the earth, and thank goodness that the Cincinnati Zoo conservation, number one zoo in the nation. You know, it's a reminder when you go to the zoo, it's a reminder of the earth's beauty. The new elephant trek exhibit, absolutely incredible. You feel like you are right there in the Serengeti, you know, and not that I've been, but I imagine. You have an outlook on the earth and the planet and animals and like the systems of ecology. And it's just a reminder that we are living in a universe that is bigger than us. And the way we treat it and respect it is important, and it is based on science that we all learned at some point. And so I would challenge people to dig deep, learn it for yourself. Start with the Green Cincinnati Plan. Google something.
Yeah, Google something, man.
Google something. But, you know, we are on a path, and as the scientists are telling us, you know, if we don't get this under control, we are on a path of destroying the natural habitat, which affects everything. It affects food production.
Oh, yeah.
It affects access to water. It affects the ability to be able to go outside or not if it's 100 degrees. It affects the way people live when you have folks that don't have central air.
Right.
They're already living in conditions that are challenging. It affects your body when you're hotter. There are studies that show the impact on your mental health. And what does that do when you are a young person? You go outside, not only are you hungry, but you're hot. You have an unstable house. All of these things. So it matters. And it's based on science. And so, definitely, go ahead.
You know, I have a confession to make. A couple of them, actually. I've never been to the Cincinnati Zoo.
Oh, my goodness.
And so it isn't that I don't like zoos, but I got a problem with seeing animals locked up. It's not their natural habitat. You know what I'm saying? Poor Harambe had to get shot. He was in captain. You know what I'm saying? But I'm saying I don't like going there. But the second thing is, I can't deal without water, because sometimes I take a shower to go out and cut the grass.
Right.
So we need to get this green deal thing going on.
Clean air, clean water. And just to your point about the zoo, and I understand that kind of statement outlook. Here's the thing. The detriment, and the Cincinnati Zoo is the number one zoo in the nation for a reason. They are conserving not only the usage of their own energy and water and all the things. Great people there, for sure. We're talking about people that respect the planet and the natural ecosystem. And so saving species Because it's not like it was 100, 200, you know, million years ago, elephants freely roaming.
Right.
All of the natural, you know, animals, amphibians, all the things, again, going back to science, the way the earth moves, rotates, all of the systems impact each other, you know, God forbid we would never be able to see an elephant or a beautiful species of a bird that is on the verge of extinction because of deforestation, right? So, you know, the zoo is again the number one zoo in the nation for a reason, and we certainly want to see people do it right, and they're doing it right. They're helping to preserve what could be in jeopardy 100 years from now.
Yeah.
You know? So again, it all goes back to the planet, right? Which is why everyone being educated on climate, the impact climate has on our earth, on our communities, is important.
So I'm going to make it a habit to go to the zoo. I'm going to get out
my... We should go together, and we should invite other people who've never gone to the zoo to come join us.
Yeah, you know what? I think it'd be a great idea. I mean, I've been putting it off. I was like, man, I don't want to go see them animals, poor animals in them cages. But I had to go see them. I mean, I love animals, but not to the point that I want to take care of any. But I'm glad the people down at Cincinnati Zoo take care of
them. Oh, yeah, and they take their job very seriously. I actually was at the zoo. I'm sorry. I was actually at the zoo not long ago, and I serve on the zoo ambassador board. And you know, great, great folks. And I actually have the same observations. Like, I am here in this beautiful place that allows you to transport and escape. And I haven't been here in a really long time just to enjoy, because the zoo is a magical place. So yes, we have to go. But, you know, they were sharing with us, we had the opportunity to just learn about, you know, new exhibits and how they take care of the animals and how particular and specific it is. And it just gives you an appreciation for people who are taking care of the natural creatures of the earth. It certainly, and I will just, you know, say this too, as a fine point on my soapbox tonight, respect.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, respect for oneself, others, the planet, living creatures, you know, these are things that like are center us or should center us on being human beings, good human beings, which we need a lot more of right now. I mean, yeah. I know they're good human beings on the earth, and we need folks to recognize that it is our humanity that is most critical and most important. How we treat one another, how we treat the earth, right? These are things that embody who we are as living beings who are created as well. And again, as believers, you know, created in the image and likeness. And so therefore, that comes with a responsibility. And as believers, we should know and continue to be reminded of that, you know, the things that we do, that we say, our actions and our thoughts, have residual impact.
Yeah.
And so in this space of service, in this space of government, in this space of truth, what is true? Listen to the words that people are saying, because they are either building up or tearing down. And that is the moment that we are in right now. Nonetheless, because we are human beings created by something much bigger than us. And if you're not a believer, okay, that's fine too. But, you know, certainly this planet existed.
Yeah. Yeah. So I was going to ask you, but I don't even have to ask this question. I was going to ask you, how do you keep your drive going to continue in politics? But man, you got so much going on, and I can hear the passion in your voice about it. So I don't even have to ask that question. You just got it in you. You was born to be a politician.
Sis, you know, my mom will probably agree with you. My granddad, as I'm looking at his picture right now, he came to America from South America, from Guyana. And he came by way of England. And so he arrived in New York first and at some point made his way to Cincinnati and met my grandmother, who I never had the opportunity to meet. I was a month old when she passed away. But the stories of Samuel Waddell was that he was this very fine, dapper gentleman who wore a suit. My mom's sister, growing up in Mount Auburn, so spent time over there on Earnshaw Avenue. But this Samuel Waddell, who sold insurance and was a respectable man and human and folks, he was well regarded in the community. And so my mom would remind me, you know, DNA is certainly cyclical, but he certainly had that flair. So it probably is a little something in my DNA as a result of my granddad and my parents too. You know, there are the pieces and components that you look back and you're like, okay, I got that from them. But yeah, it was probably my granddad.
Yeah, yeah. So what do you tell a young person who's thinking about going into politics?
Great question. Be authentic in how you show up. Show up for the right reasons, which means it's never about you.
Mm. You're a servant.
And I've always thought of myself in that way prior to being an elected official. That's just where I've, you know, aligned myself in life, wanting to see good things for people happen and be a part of that. And that should be the driving motivation.
Yeah. So I got to ask this question. I hope the mayor is not listening, but you ever thought about running for mayor?
I am in a place where I truly... No, I'm where I'm supposed to be.
Okay.
I do as a public servant. And so it has been my great honor and privilege to do this work. And I would say, you know, if I will continue to serve as long as the voters will have me. So
no Mayor Owens.
I'm here to serve. Where I can make a change, a difference. I am all here for it.
That's a loaded question. I did that on purpose. That's a loaded question. Mayor Owens. I had to ask that question though. So any last words before we get out of here?
This has been a wonderful conversation. And as I mentioned to you, J. Will, before we got on air, thank you for creating a space that is unconventional. And we need more of these outlets and opportunities. As we think about, again, my larger message here today is show up, get involved, be a part of the solution, and help others, right? That I think those are elements to creating community. At the end of the day. And I'm also reminded of a book that I just started that I need to finish. But Martin Luther King, Dr. King, his book, From Chaos or Community, Where Do We Go From Here? And I think it's certainly relevant. And when Dr. Bernice King was here over Black Family Reunion Weekend, I had the opportunity to see her at Corinthian. And she brought that book up. She said, you should read this. It is just as relevant today as it was when he first wrote it. And I, just by the title, would say so. And so I think it goes back to, we all have a responsibility in this world, and we are either making it a better place for folks or not. And I would admonish us to be on the side of making it a better place. Loving thy neighbor, supporting one another, And certainly, you know, being in this role as an elected leader, knowing that there are challenges in life for all of us and those that are even most marginalized that might be challenged to even think about, you know, I'm trying to put food on the table and keep this roof over my head, let alone pay attention to what is happening in local government, which is why this position has to be about change, effectuating change, systemic change that helps those that are most marginalized at the end of the day. Because systems always work for those who, right? I mean, there are usually in systems, and when we think about the history of this nation, there are those that benefit and there are those that do not. And so what is in between are the policies and the laws and the way we apply resources that can make a difference.
Yeah.
And so while I represent a large swath of lots of constituents in Cincinnati, it is also our responsibility that those that are the least of us, certainly where we spend our time and resource and to be able to lift them, because as the saying goes, a rising tide lifts all boats. And so for me, until we go back to the systemic things and help those that are the least and we pull the resources together because we all want to go in the same direction, that is impacting the greater good and the greater we. So again, anyone thinking about running for office and particularly young people, it is about creating change for those that need the voice of those who have the opportunity to speak truth, to power.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's good. I just want to say that, you know, ladies and gentlemen, you have to be responsible. And this thing called freedom requires a whole lot of responsible people to make this thing work efficiently. And so it takes us that are not in politics. It takes us that do radio and do social media projects. It takes our congresswomen and councilwomen and mayors and lawyers, the police officers, the hospital workers, the zoo workers, the sanitation workers, the road workers, you know, the people working at the restaurants on a daily basis to make this thing, this melting pot work. And so we all have to be responsible, not only to ourselves, but we have to be responsible when we're handling other people. And this is the only way this thing works. I'm ex-military, and so I don't believe that irresponsible people should be free because they put what we're trying to accomplish, all the wonderful things that you're doing to help the community, in danger because they're irresponsible and they're careless. And so I'm begging you, ladies and gentlemen, just dig down real deep. And be more responsible. And if you haven't done so already, tap 211. Y'all need to remember that number. If you need help, Councilwoman Owens is here to serve. And I couldn't be more proud of you.
Thank you.
You know what I'm saying?
Means a lot. This is not an easy role. But what continues to motivate me and inspire me is results.
Yeah.
Me leaving Cincinnati better than how I found her at the end of the day. My mom taught me that. So that's how I show up every day. And it's an honor and a privilege. It is. And to your point, it's a responsibility that I don't take lightly.
Yeah. Well, good job. Ladies and gentlemen, don't forget to go out and vote. There's a whole lot of people that got dogs sicked on them, that got water hoses from the fire department sicked on them, that had the military called on them, that had to count beans in the jar to be able to vote. Go out and vote. I don't care who you vote for, just as long as you practice the right to vote. A lot of people sacrifice, a lot of challenges, you know, that has happened as a result of all this foolishness that went on. But go out and vote. If you haven't done so already, go to your Play Store on your phone. It's free. I promise it's free. And download the live365.com app. And then plug in J. Will Gospel Radio, 24/7 gospel music. Shoot me an email, LeeWill@gmail.com. LeeWill@gmail.com. All right. Until next time. Oh, wait a minute. Don't wait till you get sick to go to the doctor.
Yeah, no. And can I say one more thing?
Yes, ma'am.
Don't wait November 4th to vote. Early vote starts October the 7th, which is great. You can go up to the Board of Elections, cast your ballot. And I appreciate your support in this election to get back in City Hall and do the work. VoteMika.com.
Yeah, VoteMika.com. Vote for Councilwoman Mika D. Owens. All right, don't wait till you get sick to go to the doctor. Get yourself checked out, A1C, blood pressure, cholesterol, and all that good stuff. Men, go to the doctor. Get your prostate checked. I know y'all got this thing about this, but prostate cancer is killing Black men like you wouldn't believe. And get some life insurance. Don't leave your family strapped in case something happens to you. Okay, until the next time, may the Lord God bless and keep you. May the Lord make his face to shine upon you, and may the Lord God give you peace.
If you have a topic you'd like to discuss with me, email me at LeeWill@gmail.com. LeeWill@gmail.com.